You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Mom life. We're surrounded with the message that it's the tired life, the no time for myself life, the hard life. And while it is hard and full of lots of servitude, the idea that motherhood means a joyless life is something I'm passionate about putting a stop to. I'm on a mission to help you stop counting down the minutes till bedtime. At least most days. I want you to stop cleaning up after your kid's childhood and start being present for it. Start enjoying it. I believe in John 10:10 that we are called to abundant life, and I know mothers are not excluded from that promise. Join me in conversations about simplicity, minimalism, and lots of other good stuff that leads to a life of less for the sake of enjoying more in your motherhood. I'm Ali Casaza, and this is The Purpose Show. Guys, welcome. All right, we are doing an Ask Anything episode. I love these. So usually on Instagram, sometimes we involve Facebook. Sometimes we'll send an email out and get some questions from there. But what we do is we send out like a topic with a question box where people see a topic like, you know, family, minimalism, business, and they can submit any question that they have on that topic for me. And so a while back, we did one centered around business. And I think next time we do it, I'm going to be more specific because this is just such a beast of a topic. It's just really huge and it's really important. And it's a huge passion of mine. I absolutely love helping other women get creative and get passionate and, you know, create money and revenue and a successful business out of what they care about. What their passion is, and absolutely from their living room sofa, not needing to go out and be away from their kids if that's not what they want. And some of you mamas absolutely want that and need the break and just thrive doing your thing outside of the house, and that's great, but not everybody wants that. So for those of you who are starting your own businesses and have a dream to work from home and want to create, you know, income from your blog or, you know, your podcast or whatever it is, I'm your girl. I love helping with that. And although this podcast is not a business podcast, you know, this is something that we can talk about every once in a while. And if you guys have the questions and they're rolling in enough, you know, we'll talk about anything on here because this show is a lifestyle show for moms. So it's not, you know, it's not one and done. It's not just about one thing. So, okay, I've got a big list of questions here. And what I'm going to do, like, I'm just really relaxed here, just doing this live, just kind of like going, well, you know, this is recorded, but you know what I'm saying? This isn't super pre-planned or anything. I've just got a list of questions here in Trello, and I am going to just go through and skim through them and pick out the ones that seem like they'd be the most helpful. And we'll just kind of go through it this way. So ask me anything about business. Here we go. Okay, so here are some questions that are about the starting process of a business. Let's see. What was the hardest part of starting your business? Being broke. If you guys have not listened to episode 6 of The Purpose Show, you might want to go back and do that. It's basically the story of our business, the story of how we came to run this together, Brian and I, and he, you know, he used to work for a really big company. He worked a ton of hours. He was gone all the time. And we were just really broke all the time. We lived that way for years. And so just not having the financial resources to start out in an easier way. I think starting a business is incredibly grueling no matter what, but also not having funds for things like a new laptop, you know, a microphone, even some decent headphones. Like I desperately wanted noise canceling headphones just so that I could, you know, get some work done in the evenings when Brian would come home from work and he'd be doing bedtime. The kids and I, you know, I could hear everything. And, you know, we lived in the Midwest at the time, so it would be like icy and cold. And, you know, being from SoCal, I just didn't want to brace that and go out and find a coffee shop or they'd all be really full. And it just became like too difficult to like even find a spot to work in town, you know, and it just was easier to stay home. But I could hear everything and it was hard to focus. And my laptop was really crappy. I got it off of Craigslist from this like creepy guy. And it just wouldn't work. The fan was super loud on it. It was old. It was slow. I was constantly worried about how we were going to make it. How are we going to pay bills? We were behind on our car. We were behind on our rent. So just that stress, that heavy financial burden was the hardest part of starting for me. But I think also, and this might be more relatable to everyone else, working so hard to create really good content that's going to help people and feeling like nobody is seeing it. That's really frustrating. It takes a lot of time and energy, and you're just like constantly creating this stuff, these blog posts, you know, these podcast episodes, whatever it is for you. For me at the time, I didn't have the podcast. It was a blog-based business. You know, I had been blogging for, gosh, I don't know, like 5 years, but just had then just recently decided, you know what, I'm going to turn this into a business. We're done with this, you know, hand to mouth lifestyle. And this is, I'm going to make this something big. And I told Brian that, you know, I'm going to get to a point where, you know, people know my name and this is big and they know my message. And this is going to be a global phenomenon. Just watch. And it's really cool because I said that when we were like trying to stretch one cereal bowl into four and, you know, in the middle of the Midwest, away from all of our friends and family, just really struggling. And it's hard because you see that picture and you're busting out all this content to help people, but it does kind of feel sometimes like nobody is even seeing it. And I think my advice on that, I don't want to just like tell you what the hardest part was and then move on. What I would say to anybody in that place who's really relating to that, you know, what I'm saying, I would say you need to realize the power of the few people who are watching. Even if they're not reading every blog post, even if they're not opening up every email, you know, they're there. Somebody is there. Somebody really likes what you have to say, even if there's one person, even if there's three, if there's 50, if there's a few hundred, you know, but it's just not massive. Don't look at what I have now and think like, man, I just wish, you know, it's not helpful. It's not constructive. And you have to realize that I was talking about this same stuff that I'm talking about now, but nobody was there. It was just like, you know, 10 people, and then it grew to 50 people, and then it grew to 300 people. And I thought that was a big deal some days, but then other days I'd get frustrated because I'd see other people having way more than me, and I let that frustrate me. But the thing is that like you will never ever have those tens of thousands or millions of people if you don't start with the 10. If you don't serve those 10 well and show up for them and consistently get in their inbox and create content that's helpful for them and inspiring for them, that's true to who you are so they can connect with you, then those are the people who are going to spread you to their friends and their neighbors and their families and, you know, share you on social media and talk about you at mom's group. Those are the people that grew me into, you know, the millions now, but it doesn't start that way for most people. What is the very first, sorry, I'm going to the next question. I'm really bad at these. I always just like go into the next thing with my normal voice and people are like, wait, is this the next question or next question? What is the very first step you would take if you had to do it all over again? This is an amazing question. I would start my email list earlier. I blogged for a long time with really no email list. I had like an RSS feed and stuff like that, but you have to have an email list. Like you need to go to, I recommend ConvertKit. That's what I use for my email list. I love them and I like their pricing. It moves up as your list size grows. So you're not paying like $500 a month right out the gate. It's like $49 a month to start. And then as you grow more followers and more email subscribers, then the price goes up accordingly. So like once you hit 500, I think it goes up a little bit. And once you hit, you know, 5,000, it goes up a little bit like that. Because when you have your email list is where your money is going to come in. I don't like to rely on social media and algorithms for my success. I love Instagram and I do use it. I don't really play the algorithm games. I just kind of show up there and do my thing. And, you know, I'm not super rule following and picky on there about like, when's the perfect time to post this photo? And I'm there, I'm sharing. And people, once they realize it, they stay and they like the content and I'm not worried about the algorithms. But the thing is that like so many people put all their eggs in one basket or, They just rely so heavily on social media to carry their businesses. And the problem with that is that, you know, certain platforms expire, you know, they die out. Look at Periscope. Periscope was the newest, the latest, the hottest live streaming platform. It was super popular. It grew, it broke records with how much it grew and how quickly it grew. It was such a success. And then it died because of Facebook Live. So, you know, and Facebook's not, you know, they're probably not going anywhere, but that still doesn't mean that you should put all your eggs in that basket because their algorithm is constantly changing. It's like a mind game over there. I don't want my business success or failure to be in the hands of someone else. And Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest is all being run. There are other companies running them. But when you focus on your email list, you put the power in your own hands. Everybody checks their email. No one's going to miss that. Maybe they'll choose to not open it, but everyone checks their email. So when you get in your in their inbox, that's powerful. That is where you can make sales. You can connect. You can, you know, share your passion in a very deep way. And it's very personal. You know, you're writing like a friend to these people. I always write my emails like they're to a friend because I feel that way about you guys, first of all. And secondly, because I want to connect with you, because if I can't connect with you, you're not going to hear my message, and my message is important and it's going to change your life if you'll hear it. So I know that. And I wish that I would have realized that sooner, because by the time I did start my email list pretty early on when I switched my blog to my business. But I just wish that I would have had an email list growing, you know, while I was blogging for 5 years, I did not have any email list and that really sucked. So starting from zero there, you know, it's hard. Okay, let's see. Next question. How did you start making a steady income from your blog? So there are a few different options when it comes to, you know, creating income from your blog. The most common way is affiliates. I'm not a huge fan of affiliate marketing. And by this, I mean like Amazon affiliate links, talking about other products and trying to get the clicks to make money. It just doesn't vibe with me. I don't like to be paid to tell people what products from Amazon to buy. I don't really do any of that. I do have an Amazon affiliate account because obviously at my level, there's like millions of people watching what I do. So it's like, if I do happen to find like a really great jacket or a great pair of shoes that I absolutely love and I want to share it of my own volition, I will. And I do believe I should be compensated from that. So like every once in a while, I'll use an affiliate link like that. But some people use Amazon affiliate links like they find things that are high price so that each click gets them more money, and they will not even buy the product. They'll just, you know, promote it like they, you know, make stuff up straight out of the air and then like use Amazon affiliate links to try to get money. And I just, that's just doesn't work for me. Like I said, it doesn't vibe with me. It feels dishonest and slimy, and I just didn't want to do that. I also am just not a huge fan of getting people to click away from my site. Like I said, I'm not here to have a blog that makes me money. I'm here to spread my message. So if you're there to just have a blog that makes you money and to bring in income, there's nothing wrong with that. Your approach is just going to be different. And you might want to look into affiliate links and things like that and creating money from things other people have done. My courses have affiliate programs, and a lot of moms sign up for the affiliate program and make money from telling people about my courses that have changed their lives already. And then they make the money back that they spent on the course and then some, and they bring in, you know, hundreds every month. It just depends on how they're sharing it. So there's nothing wrong with affiliate programs. I think they're very powerful. But for me, my message is my passion, and it's important that I get that out into the world. And I knew there was a way for me to create a very steady and powerful income by doing that. So I went the route of courses and online programs. So basically, it's almost impossible to get everything out that you want to say for free on a blog or a podcast, like, and you know, if you're a busy mom. But if you put everything in one, like a vault in one area, and you organize it, you put it in order, you can see that you've covered every single topic, every single base, then you can package it up and sell it. And that's basically what an online course is. So it's for the people who want all the information. They're done with whatever the problem is that your course solves, and they want the solution. They're willing to pay for it, and they want all of it. They don't want to just get inspired and listen to a blog or listen to a podcast or read a blog. You know, they want to be coached to solving this problem that your course solves. And so I created my course because my audience was asking me for one. And then it was slow going at first, of course, but eventually, just through growth and guest blogging on other people's blogs and, you know, getting podcast interviews, doing things like that, I spread the word enough. I was doing webinars and like no one was coming and I just kept doing them and eventually people came. Eventually the income went from like a few $100 a month to like a few thousand. And, you know, now we have an incorporation. We have an S corp. So we have this big incorporation that employs all these people and makes multiple seven figures every year from a low priced course. Like most courses are in the thousands and my highest one is less than $300. That's just unheard of. But I want to tell you, like, now it is heard of and you can do that as well. I started from nothing, you guys. There was nothing special about my story. There was nothing special about me. I was a normal girl, very overwhelmed, very afraid of fame, very afraid of being seen, very private, but I had a burning passion to spread my message. And I had a burning passion to create revenue for my family so that my husband could get out of his crappy job and, you know, we could step into this lifestyle that we had only dreamed of. And it seemed impossible. Honestly, so many people that I really appreciated and respected told me that it was impossible. Nobody took me seriously. And, you know, honestly, still some people don't. They'll say things like, you're lucky, or, wow, like you went viral and you just like are so lucky. Like this happened for you. Like, oh, it's so lucky that you just get to like take Instagram pictures and like make a bunch of money. And it's like very, very like just demeaning. It's a lot of hard work and it absolutely is not for everyone. I think it's something like 1% of entrepreneurs like actually keep going more than a year and have successful businesses. If you want to be in that 1%, you've got to do the work. And it takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. I mean that quite literally. It's just a lot of hustle and a lot of focus and a lot of being willing to learn and being willing to change your mind and be flexible. So that is the first step that I would do. If I could do it all over again, I would start that email list early. And making steady income came from the courses. So I know that was a lot, but I hope that answers those two questions. Where are my business-minded mamas at? I have something for you that I'm super excited to be sharing. If you've ever wondered the behind-the-scenes and inside scoop on how I grew my business from a tiny hobby blog with zero income to a multiple seven-figure per year corporation, I have so, so much to tell you. I've compiled all my favorite resources, books, courses, advice, just kind of a brain dump of everything that helped teach me what I know now and get me to where I am today, other than a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and some serious hustle and late nights. I've put it all together for you guys, and it's in the blog to business guide. So if you already have a blog or a platform and you want to grow it into a business, or you don't have anything yet, but you're just kind of wanting to get more information and you know you have some ideas, but you just want some resources and you wish you knew, what are the best books to give my time to? What are the best courses? What are the best investments I can make in time or money to learn about growing a successful business? I've given you all of my opinions in the blog to business guide, and you can go get it right now by heading to aliecasaza.com/blog-to-biz. That's BLOGTOBIZ. Let's see. How do you keep the courage to turn your ideas into a business when you see others in the same field succeeding, especially in the mom niche? Well, first of all, I think that it doesn't matter if anyone else is doing something. You have your own personality and your own voice, and that's why it's so important to be yourself. It's really easy when the camera starts to roll to kind of just switch and get into this different tone of talking, get into this different mode. And I still find myself doing it sometimes. And to some effect, you know, it's just to some extent, it's just normal. But I think it's important to remain true to yourself. And that's hard. You know, things like the words that I'll say or the way I'll phrase something, like I'm a really blunt person and I love Jesus, but I cuss a little. And, you know, sometimes like things like that are hard because you see the judgmental comments and people like saying that I can't believe that you would phrase that way. That was so harsh. And it's like, well, it's not harsh. I'm just being sarcastic, but I guess you don't like sarcasm and I can't really control that. So things like that, like just the running opinions of other people can sometimes like make it just a little difficult to not like turn on your fake camera face and voice. But typically like you've got to just get over it and you have to create the courage. It's not like, oh, how do you keep the courage to do this? It's you have to make the choice to be courageous and realize you have your own personality. You have your own voice. You have your own way of saying and doing things. And that is what's going to connect you to your audience. If you're not connecting with someone, they're just not your audience. It doesn't matter. You don't want them. They're not your audience. They're someone else's audience. There's been a lot of frustration for me in my business journey with the minimalism becoming a trend after I had been teaching it, you know, feeling like I was talking to a wall for so long and just not growing a following. And it was just, you know, really frustrating. And then minimalism just became this trend and all of these other people started doing it and they had very quick success while I'm in the background, like just trying so hard. And so a lot of the time people will talk to me like, oh, you were smart. You jumped on board after this became a trend and, you know, you got on it. And it was like, no, I've been doing this for much longer, but it's fine. So I think just kind of keeping your head down and focusing on what you're going for, being yourself, letting your personality shine. You know, a lot of people try to kind of pit me up against and compare me to Marie Kondo, and I'll never play that game. There's a lot of differences in the way we teach and a lot of differences in our personalities, and that's good. She's very sweet. She's very like gentle, and she has a totally different way of teaching things that, you know, some things I just, this is not my style. I just won't do that. And some things I just disagree with as a mom. It's not going to work for us overwhelmed, busy moms. So that's good. I'm much more, you know, I can be really empathetic. I'll often cry with people who are struggling. I take on the emotions of other people. And so I can be sweet in that way. But I'm typically like, you know, just more blunt. And I have a lot of humor that I infuse in things with the way I describe situations and just kind of try to make people feel lighter about what they're struggling with. And I just have a different, like, no nonsense, no BS approach to clutter. So some people like that and some people don't. So it's good that you're different. It's good that you're doing the same thing as someone else, because that means that niche, you know, your niche needs that. Needs that message. You actually don't want to start a business about something that no one is doing and you can't find anything about. There's a reason for that. So just stick true to who you are and be persistently you. No matter how big it gets, you need to be consistently you. Let yourself shine. If you're blunt and sarcastic, let that be a part of what you do. If you're, you know, really sweet and empathetic, let that be a part of it. If you're a mix of all four of those things like me, then let that be what shines. People connect to people. They don't connect to business ideas. Okay, next question. What's your number one tip for a mom trying to grow a hobby blog read by mostly just family and friends into something bigger that brings in more money? So I would go back to the earlier questions I answered. Get yourself an email list. You can use MailChimp. You can use ConvertKit. Whatever floats your boat. You could use something else. But get an email list set up and you need to create a free opt-in. A free opt-in is like a PDF, like a checklist of some kind that goes hand in hand with what you're sharing, what you're teaching. So for example, my most popular free opt-in is the Clear the Clutter Starter Kit. It used to be called the Minimalism Starter Kit. That's been around for years. That has about 100,000 downloads to it. So 100,000 people have downloaded that in just like, you know, 3 years, which is amazing. So that is a free opt-in. And in exchange for their email address, I give somebody something helpful for free. So that's what a free opt-in is. You can do a video series. You could do one video. You could do a PDF checklist, ebook, you know, something like that. You could do an email challenge. You're giving them something valuable for free. They just have to give you their email address. So you grow your email list like that. That's my number one tip for you. Let's see. How do you narrow multiple interests into the one people most connect with? Test it out. Talk passionately about what your interests are. And you will probably find not only is your audience responding more to one than the others, but you're connecting more to one than the others. Probably the same one your audience is connecting with, because they are going to connect with your passion. So just start. You know, I used to talk about all kinds of things, marriage, faith, parenting, postpartum depression, minimalism, house stuff. And I became, as I evolved as a minimalist and just as a mom dealing with overwhelm, I became extra passionate about the house part. I came across far too many women who didn't enjoy being at home. They avoided being at home. They felt really depressed when they were at home. They felt very overwhelmed by their homes. And I used to be like that. And then I got out of it and I created a beautiful space that I loved being in. Even though we were super broke, I got really good at like budgeting, decorating on a budget, things like that, and minimalism, just simplifying. It changed my life. And so that passion showed through. And as I became more passionate about that, my audience began to not read the other things. They wouldn't even get clicked. The emails wouldn't get opened. The blog posts wouldn't get read. Like things, it wasn't happening. And so I just naturally scooted over into this specific topic. But of course, you guys who've listened to, you know, different podcast episodes, you see that you can still have it all. You can still talk about other things. My podcast is kind of my outlet for just discussing life and just encouraging people on all topics. We have all kinds of different guests, you know, health guests, marriage guests, sex guests, personal growth guests, you know, and I talk about all different things, you know, living well and full, being a strong woman, the Enneagram and personality types. You know, we celebrate together. We have fun episodes. We have serious episodes. I cry. I laugh. You know, we are relaxed and some are more strategic. Like it's all the things. So don't think that you have to pick one thing, but at the same time, like what am I most known for? You know, minimalism, home stuff, simplified living. And so that goes into like home and calendar and life. So I hope that makes sense. You'll figure it out. Just start to talk and start to share. Don't be afraid to survey your audience. Ask them what they think you're best at, but don't do it too soon. Like make sure it's been a while of you sharing, you know, your multiple interests and then kind of see what you connect to sharing most. What do you love sharing about so much that you would do it all day long for free? You know, for me, that was minimalism, but talking about like faith and dealing with like the just all the rude and difficult feedback from that, like it just drained me. I found myself like, you know, not in a way where I was like ashamed or anything, like ashamed of God or ashamed of my walk with Him, but just like not. I wasn't drawn to it. And I actually struggled with that one specifically for a really long time because a lot of people will tell you or tell me still, like, you need to talk about Jesus more and like, you don't share your faith enough. And I'm offended by that. And it's like, well, then you go share your faith, because I can tell you right now, I'm 8 years into blogging and I know for a fact that going way deep into that and sharing openly, making that my niche is not my calling. Just because you believe something doesn't mean it's your calling to talk about it exclusively. So don't let anyone like tell you that or, you know, try to change your mind about something that you feel strongly is what you're supposed to be talking about. I know that what I'm talking about now, what I'm most known for with helping women create spaces that they love, helping them simplify so they can focus on what matters, I was born to do this. And you should feel that way about what you do with your business and your blog or your podcast or whatever it is. Next question. How many hours is a good amount to dedicate to starting your business without it taking over all your time? So I think I'm going to flip your question around and instead say, where are the blocks of time you can fit it in? Going back to an example from my personal life, when I started this business, it was in January of 2016. And you know, started really learning and focusing on turning my blog into a business. That's when that was. And Brian would leave for work around 7:40 in the morning, and he would come back like after dinner. So I got up at 4 a.m. for a year, and I worked for a few hours before he went to work. And that's when I got the bulk of my stuff done. About halfway through the day, I would just need to kind of take a power nap. So I would like turn on Netflix for the kids and snuggle with Emmett. Emmett was a baby, and I would kind of nurse him to a nap, and we would nap together for like a half an hour in the middle of the day. So I got that. And then I would often work again at night before I went to bed and let Brian cook dinner if he was home in time. Or if he wasn't, I would handle dinner, and then he would come in and kind of do bath and bedtime and all of that. I wouldn't do that every night because I wanted to have that family time at night, but a few nights a week I would also work at night. So I ended up working like some days I would end up working 7 hours a day, and other days it would be 3 or 4 hours. So it's not about how many hours is the magic number. It's about where are the blocks of time that you can fit it in. And when I started to look at that and I saw that there were none, I had to make a choice. Am I in this or not? And that's when I made the choice to get up at an ungodly hour every morning for a year. And it was so worth it. And those are the kinds of decisions that separate the ones who succeed from the ones who don't. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit and go into the questions that are more about like balance with work and family. Okay, How do you protect your kids' privacy and security while still sharing about them? This is a very good question. So I've done a lot of research on this. So I would encourage anyone who's looking to be like a, it's a kind of a bad way to phrase it, because I was going to say anyone who's looking to be a public figure or like a lifestyle person, but I wasn't looking for that. I didn't realize that that would just happen based on what I do. I always say that I'm so glad I didn't know that this public figure role would happen with what I did with my blog and my business, because if I had known, just with my personality and how much I value privacy, I probably wouldn't have done it. It's really hard. That's the hardest part of all of this for me. I'm so much better now. Even talking about it now, I'm like, is it really the hardest part anymore though? Cause I'm really over it. I really don't care. People make up stuff about me all the time. And I just don't care. Sometimes people will like figure out things like, or piece things together that I've said from the past that are true and try to like use it against me. And it's like, I don't care. Like, I know that I said that, or I know that that happened, or I know that that's who I used to be. Like, it doesn't matter. But before this year, it was really hard for me. And so once I saw that this was happening and it kind of felt like it was spiraling out of control and people were like really obsessively watching our family and looking at us, I started to do some really heavy research on just kids' privacy and safety. And there's so much out there. Please go look it up for yourself. But basically, there are some rules, like never show the front of your house. Never show the license plate on your car or of a car that is always near where you are, like the license plates on the cars that are in my neighborhood, things like that, because people are crazy, much crazier than you probably are, and they will look you up and they will find you. Trust me, I won't get into details, but we've had some really weird stuff happen, and it's disturbing. People are very, very strange. Especially when you're connecting with people and you're sharing your heart and you're helping them. Some people get kind of like obsessive and strange. Also, be very careful with the types of photos of your kids that you post, if you choose to post them at all. I know some people, I even have some friends who are not influencers and they just live this way. And I have some other influencer friends who, they just really don't share anything about their kids. They're not a part of their role. They're not a part of their business. They're not a part of their image. And that's just the way that it is. For me, I actually really don't like that as much as I love privacy. I wanted to make sure that people were able to see how this is lived out, that they could see our family. And I use Instagram story almost like a vlog most days. Some days I'm not so good at it, but most days I do. And I like that. You know, the kids like it too. They'll say like, "Mom, can you show this on your Instagram stories?" You know, we're all involved. We're all in it together. And I like that. I don't mind having my kids a part of what I do. And I think it's important, but be careful. The weirdest, most random photos that you would never think have anything wrong with them will end up snagged from your blog and put on a pedophile site. And I'm not even kidding. You have to watch. You have to be careful. Have somebody, or if you can't, do it yourself. Or if you can't, have somebody be in charge of just watching where blog traffic is coming from. If you ever see a spike on something, follow the trail. Make sure that it's from like a reputable site. It's like from a mommy blogger sharing you or something. It's not from, you know, a bunch of creeps looking at your photos. There's things like bathing suits, shorts, like things like, just be careful. Just be respectful, but respect your kids' privacy too. There's a lot of things like, maybe I'm telling a story about a difficult day we had with one of our kids. I won't say who it is unless I've talked to them and I'm like, "Hey, I think this would really be helpful for other moms. I'm going to tell this story, but I'm going to leave your name out. Okay. Is that all right with you?" And sometimes they'll say like, "Oh, you can say my name, Mom. Like, I want them to know how old I am." And you know, they get it. They want to help you guys. And sometimes they're like, "Yeah, okay." And I won't say, you know, which kid it is, because I don't want to embarrass or shame my kids. And a lot of public figure parents are not aware of this, sadly. So you just have to just think, how can I respect my kids in this way? They don't have a say. So where is their privacy here? There was one situation about 3 years ago when we got offered a reality TV show. And as we kind of like just met with the producers, we talked with them, we started to just ask, like, kind of see what they were envisioning. I quickly found out that they originally reached out and said they wanted it to be about my business and what I do for women. And then they like very quickly switched gears and decided that we were fascinating because we lived in the camper and we were touring the US at the time. And they were like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing. No, we want to do a reality show about your family and your kids." And I said, "I'm not okay with that." And they really pushed and they really wanted it to be that way. And it just wasn't right for me. It's not that reality TV families are doing anything wrong, but in my gut, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel right at the time, and it still doesn't feel right now to have a reality show about our family. It just doesn't feel right to me. So you have to follow that. I always say, like, you were chosen out of every mother who ever lived in any era to be the parent, the mother to your kids. There's a reason for that. This is why I think that it's ridiculous when moms judge each other for their choices. Like, oh, you let your kids watch SpongeBob? I would never do that. And it's like, okay, well, there's probably some reason that one of your kids just wouldn't do well watching SpongeBob. Then don't do that. But don't, you know, hate on us who are like, oh, SpongeBob is hilarious and it's fine. You know, I just think it's ridiculous. Same with this sort of thing. In my gut, I just knew, like, this isn't right. I would love to do a show about my business. I mean, I don't mind if, you know, my kids are in it every once in a while, but I don't want a reality show about our family. I just didn't feel right. And they wouldn't budge. So, you know, we didn't do the deal. And so you have to kind of just gauge with your gut what is important to you, what feels right to you. Pray about it, think about it, meditate on it, process it. It's okay to say, let me think about it to an opportunity and take a walk, talk it out with your spouse, you know, just kind of let it sift around in your brain for a weekend. This is your family and this is your life. And once something is out, it's out. And people will always, you know, try to dig up stuff on you and try to say stuff about you. And that's inevitable. It just really doesn't matter. It's empty and people are just nosy and who cares? But it is your job to protect your kids' privacy and security. So just be careful and follow research, know your stuff, know the facts, and then follow your gut for all the things that seem kind of fluid and gray. Okay. Let's take this question. How do you schedule or protect time with your family and then time for your blog business and then time to be off and away, et cetera, when the internet really never sleeps? Great question. So I'm really big on batching. I've talked about this a lot in the past, and we can link to blog posts and episodes that have been about this, but in the show notes. But basically, like, there's certain days. So usually, and I always, like, guys, take this with a grain of salt, because whenever I say something like this, I'll say, oh, I usually take Thursdays off for family day. And then, like, on a Thursday, I'll show on Instagram stories that I'm writing or getting some work done. And people will be like, I thought it was family day. And it's like, good Lord, I don't have, like, a cemented, rigid, like, you know, schedule with two guards, armed guards next to it that are going to, like, you know, shoot me up if I break my rules. It's, like, very fluid. And what I do, it comes and goes in waves very, very much. So it's like, some seasons it's so busy, you know, we'll be a little bit more flexible and, you know, maybe I'll work on an hour on a morning that I'm normally off. Maybe I won't, you know, it's fluid, but typically my weekends are really protected. We have a lot of family time on the weekends. And then on Mondays, it's pretty much like really slow going and open-ended. That's kind of the day where we go grocery shopping. We get our stuff done for the week. We prepare for the coming week, a little bit on Sunday night too. And we just kind of have a family day. We have Legoland passes. So you know, that might be a day we go to Legoland. And then also Thursdays. Thursdays are kind of like a nothing day. If I want to and I feel like I have the energy, I will sometimes catch up on just, we use Asana for like just running tasks for the business. So if I have like a bunch of unfinished tasks in my Asana, I'll kind of just maybe spend an hour or so just kind of going through them and knocking them out, you know, approving blog posts, you know, writing up emails for the week or whatever, things like that. But typically it's a really slow, quiet at home day. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Fridays are very much like go, go, go when it comes to the business. So I kind of section off my time during the week like that. And then we make sure we schedule like a week or so off really regularly. We take a lot of trips. We do a lot of travel pretty much every month. At least me is traveling. But usually I bring my family with me because that's the main reason we homeschool, is so we can travel and do fun things together and have that freedom and flexibility in our schedule to do what we want. So for example, I'm recording this right now and it's February. So, almost finished my book proposal last week. This week, it's all about the podcast. I'm recording episodes, you know, doing all of that. And then next week, it's all about like work wrap up. So I'm wrapping up some plans for an upcoming product launch and doing a couple of interviews for other people's podcasts and press. finalizing a couple of really big projects that are being planned. And then the last week of the month is our team retreat in Nashville. So I'll be gone for 9 days at the end of the month. So that's usually how it goes. Pretty much every month, there's like a week of travel in there somewhere. Sometimes it's for work. Sometimes it's for fun. Sometimes it's for both. So I kind of block out my week to where there's balanced work time, rest time, family time, and then also my months. Like, well, we're due for a family vacation. Let's take a trip. Let's just go up to San Diego for 5 days and just rest. I'm speaking over here on the East Coast this week. Let's add 5 days to that trip and just make a family event out of it. So just kind of, how am I feeling? What's my gut telling me? What do I feel like I need? If I feel burnout coming, you know, we'll plan an extra time of rest. I will, you know, cancel a launch, cancel something. I'm never afraid to cancel. I'm never afraid to say, never mind, this isn't going to work for me. I'm too exhausted. So that's kind of how I find that balance. Oh, I wish we could get into the next section. We're going to need to do a part two on this because there is so many good questions about like courses and paid content and delegating and so good. We're going to do another part two. Guys, thank you for these questions. I really appreciate when you guys help write episodes like this because I feel like they're so good. And these are always the ones that you guys love the most because you basically wrote them and you decided what the topic was going to be. Okay, I love you guys. I will talk to you next time. If you're starting a business, please just be encouraged. Please be encouraged. And go and download my blog to business guide. It is loaded with literally just names and links to my favorite resources that helped me start my business. So the influencers, the leaders, the websites, the content, the courses, the freebies that helped form who I am as a businesswoman today are all linked in there. It's super, super helpful. Go get that in the show notes and let that kind of be your starting point. To join the Your Uncluttered Home party, go to alicasasa.com/unclutter. Also, enter code PURPOSESHOW at checkout for 10% off. That's for listeners only. I can't wait to see your introduction and the course community so I can welcome you and see your progress photos. This was an episode of The Purpose Show. Did you know there's an exclusive community created solely for the sake of continuing discussion surrounding The Purpose Show episodes and to get you to actually take action and make positive changes on the things that you learn here? Go be a part of it. To join, go to facebook.com/groups/purposefulmamas. That's M-A-M-A-S. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you're ready to up-level and really take action on the things I talk about on my show and get step-by-step help from me, head to alicasasa.com for free downloads. There's also courses there, classes, and ways that you can learn more about what the next step might look like for you and to focus on whatever it is that you really need help with in this season you're in right now. I'm always rooting for you, friend. See you next time.